Multi-part question. First, can you help me understand the psychology of the freaking four box? Okay. And and what are some tips and tricks that we can use to go, no, just no.
Okay. So when you say the four box, that's, you know, the four square where it's literally, like you just said, four boxes. One's going to have the price of the car, the down payment, the trade-in amount, and then the monthly payment range. So
welcome, everybody, to the Space Tomatoes podcast. I am one of your hosts, LX, and my co-host right over here,
Havoc.
Hey, Havoc, how's it going? And today we are with one of my favorite guys to watch on YouTube. He has his channel, Whoa. Smitty Sells Cars, Mr. Smitty himself. Hello, sir. How are you today?
What's going on, gentlemen? How is everyone today?
Going good.
Doing wonderful. It's been a whirlwind day for podcasting.
A whirlwind day for sweet Jesus. Okay. All right. Yeah, this well, is good stuff. This is thanks for inviting me out.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm excited to have you. I do enjoy watching your videos. I like seeing your reviews of used cars and new cars and cars. I'm a car guy. I know you're a car guy. You've been in the auto sales for quite a while, I know. How did you first actually get into car sales?
Well, when I was much younger, in another life, my older brother sold vehicles, and I went to visit him one day at a car dealership, at a Ford store he was working at. And I met one of the managers, and they talked to me and said, "Why aren't you here?" And I said, "I have no idea. I'm kind of bartending my way through bartending right now." And they said, "Well, we'd like to give you an opportunity." So I jumped on and started selling cars with my brother. I think it was 1999. So, yeah, I've been at it a couple minutes now. But it's been a lot of fun. And for many years, I've got to work with my brother. So it's which is a good thing. So, yeah, a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Do you ever find it difficult? Like, car salesmen aren't typically looked at sometimes with the utmost of respect.
Oh, never.
do you never. Have difficulty dealing with people that I think most people think you're out to get them or out to rip them off or all that stuff? How do you build trust with people so they don't think that?
I don't think you ever really do build trust with people in this business. I think what you just said is 90% of the time 100% true. You know, we're salespeople. We're trying to sell you a car. So, you know, when I was younger, as I just mentioned and started, you know, all we had was the newspaper. So, you know, you'd have people come in with a newspaper on a Saturday and go, "Hey, it says this right here, and I'm here for that car." Now you're bombarded online. Everything's online. You don't really need a salesman for much. So they already don't like you and know that you don't really bring a lot of value to the table like you used to. Everybody can learn about a car in 15 minutes online. So if you're thinking about buying a brand new, Toyota 4Runner, you know, years ago, you could go visit the dealership and, you know, and get a brochure and look at it in your own time, and none of that exists anymore. There's no brochures at any store. They don't exist. So Everything's online. So, you know, I will say, yeah, we have a terrible reputation, absolutely terrible, but it's mostly deserved. As much as I want to say, "Oh, we're misunderstood, we're just here to help," it's not true. We're here to sell you a car. And if that means we got to give you, you know, 19 emails of information, so be it. But yeah, it's funny. I've always sold to people that are in my little group, you know, but for many years I've been a manager. I've ran dealerships. I've been a GM. I've been a finance director. You know, so I call the car Smitty Sells Cars, but at the end of the day, I haven't really just only sold for a very long time.
So I'm going to interject a question here, and you don't have to answer it if you don't want to, but can you help, multi-part question. First, can you help me understand the psychology of the freaking four box, okay? And and what are some tips and tricks that we can use to go, no, just no.
Okay, so when you say the four box, that's, you know, the four square where it's literally, like you just said, four boxes. One's going to have the price of the car, the down payment, the trade-in amount, and then the monthly payment range. So I'm in Florida. I've been in Florida a long time. I know you're in Florida, but I know you're in Carolina. So at the end of the day, that has, you know, kind of went away. You might still find some small mom and pop dealerships grabbing a Sharpie and a piece of paper and doing that. But, you know, there's so much legal stuff now. You know, you can sue somebody just for looking at you wrong. So dealers took a beating with that. And now, at least at the stores I've been at in the 26 years, as of late, last 15 years, everything's printed. So everything's an itemized line by line now. So that whole gray area of, you know, 5,000 down, you know, 10 for your trade, this. And you go, what the hell does all this add up to? Those days aren't really there anymore. But, you know, that was a great tool for us in the car business to absolutely have you at every point. Every place you looked, you know, was going to hurt financially, that four square. So when you say, how do I avoid that? It's real simple. And this is something I talk about on the channel. If you already know what you want, if you already know I'm dead set on this Ford F-150, it's whatever, even it doesn't even have to be a new car. It can be a used car. It doesn't matter. It can be $5,000. It can be $105,000. If you already know this is what I want, I know the vehicle inside and out, reach out to that dealership by email. Give them your contact information. Here's what I want. I'm interested in this truck. What's your best price? Great. Now send me an itemized breakdown of the numbers. You need to know all the nonsense that's going to come out of the woodwork. I have to send. I was off today. However, I'm always working. I'm never off. So I had to send price quotes to tons of people. And a dealership that won't do that, there's no point in ever even getting in your car and going there. So many just want to get you in. The whole job is to get you in the store. And then you find out, well, we've got this paint package that we added. We have, you know, this pinstripe that we do for $8.99. So don't be afraid to ask for the numbers up front. And don't be afraid to tell that dealer when they drive you insane saying, you just need to come in. Yeah, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. And you'll find a dealer that sends you numbers. But yeah, I miss the old four square. I miss the old four square.
I've always wondered, and it's always been kind of one of these, you know, it's just a thing we do to make sure that, no, it's not. I know what the site, I get the idea behind it. I work in sales adjacent. I'm the technical guy that follows my account executive around. So I understand the psychology in general. But that particular thing, I was just like, it's an interesting discussion there. It's interesting that it's gone away too.
Yeah. Yeah. Lawyers have made that go away. And the whole, you know, we just want you to pick one box. We just want you to say, yeah, that down payment. So we can say, okay, so if that down payment was $3,000 and not nine, excuse me.
So what is your favorite kind of customer? The one that says they want a specific monthly payment, which I'm sure is great for you, or somebody that likes buying extended warranties because they think every vehicle needs an extended warranty on it.
So it's going to come down to what role I'm in. Like I said, I wear a lot of hats. So if I'm being a finance manager or finance director, like I normally am, where I'm over the department for the dealership, yeah, I want the person that wants to buy a warranty, of course. If you're saying just as a salesman, what kind of customer is your favorite? I don't really have one. It doesn't really matter to me. I will say this, and this is how I've always been. I try to treat everybody the same. I try to have fun with each person, whether you're buying a $4,000 cash car or, you know, a $100,000 car that, you know, it's just, you know, something that a ton of us, you know, don't have and won't have. It doesn't matter to me. I don't care. It's the only thing that makes this job fun for me is solving problems. That's it. Hmm. If I didn't enjoy that aspect of it, I would never do this. So it doesn't matter to me, the cash buyer, the finance person, the person that calls and just says, can you take 40 out the door? And I go, yeah, of course. It doesn't really matter. I don't have one way or the other. It's all the same to me.
Very cool. Speaking of finance versus cash, I did have a conversation with somebody online. I'm actually part of a Lexus forum because I have an older Lexus that, you know, almost 20 years old. And I, you know, I'm just going to drive the crap out of it till it's dead.
I love it already. Yes. As you should. But
anyway, they were talking about buying a new one. And she's like, I'm going to go buy it cash. And I'm like, I think there's more incentive for the dealer to give you a discount if you actually finance it, isn't there? Because they're
absolutely
they're getting some kind of percentage back off of that financing deal, aren't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. We at a big new car store and even a big used car store, we always want you to finance. Your best deal is going to be financing it. Lexus, you know, the air up there is pretty thin for those customers. Most of them have means to do both. Some don't. Some are big hat. Some are big hat, no cattle. But as a whole, those people have good credit. So sometimes you can go get your new, you know, GX, whatever, and you might have 0% for 60 months. So why on earth would you, you know, write a check for 58.5 when there's zero? I just don't, you know, I don't want then, you know, somebody else needs to be managing their money. And there's 0.9, 1.9, their rates are so good. You know, I would hope, you know, when you're writing a check for 60, 70,000, you know, you have somebody on your team that can have that money make more for you than you just writing a check. But some people just don't want to deal with it. They just, they're so liquid, it doesn't even matter. And when I tell them, you know, just keep your mind. No, I don't want to. And I just go, okay. You know. But yeah, there's always more incentive for the dealership to finance you. Absolutely. We get kickbacks, even at 0%. We get a couple dollars just for writing the loan.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
We can't hear you, Havoc.
Hey, look at me.
He's back.
So when I bought my Acura, it was pretty funny. I just went to my bank, USAA, and
sure.
they are very good with financing and everything else. So they just basically sent me a check, and I walked in, and I'm like, and they're like, we can finance that for you. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. And they're like, we can do it better. We can do this. And I'm like, I'm fine. I've got the financing. I've got the check. I just want the car. And they're like, well, maybe you need, let's go talk, you know. And I'm like, I don't want to talk to you.
Yeah.
I want to buy the car. If you want to sell me the car, I've got the check right here. It's all done. Just take the check, the car, I'm gone.
You know? Yeah.
But they put an inordinate amount of pressure on trying to get me in there to look at what options they can do, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. A finance person's main job is to convert you, you know, even if you're buying an old car, you know, I say old, but I mean, you know, like a used whatever, and it's 22 grand out the door and you say, I'm writing a check. We're still going to say, hey, I know you want to write that check, but at the end of the day, if I could get you, 5.49 or something. And a lot of times people do say, oh my God, I had no, really, you could get that rate? I was thinking it was going to be 15 or whatever the numbers are, And they're taken back. They just think, oh, we're, the rate's going to be too high. And then, we tell them the rate that we probably can do, depending on their credit. And a lot of them do convert and say, you know what, I will keep my money. Let me just put $5,000 down. And if you can get that 5.99 you're talking about on this 2021, yeah, I'll do that. So, yeah, we got to try, because that's your best salespeople in any dealership work in your finance department. That's where they're at.
Do people use a brokerage of forms, or do you just individually contract with finance companies, or how does that work? Or do you just open it up to the market and see what comes back?
Yeah, we all of us dealerships will use the same kind of software where we submit it to several banks at one time if we so desire. Somebody coming in a brand new car and, hey, I want to take advantage of the 0%. There's only one bank, you're captive. So if you sell Fords, and the 0% is what they want, you're going to go to Ford Credit,
Yeah.
If you're a Toyota, you're going to go to Toyota, Southeast Toyota, World Omni, whatever it's called in that area. But a used car, even a new car where people don't have the best credit, and they're not going to get a great interest rate. We shop it, and it's so much different now than it was years ago. It literally can take me 5 minutes tops, maybe 7 minutes to have, 5-6 approvals in house and just massage which one's the best. It's very, very quick. Yeah, that's very quick.
A lot different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of people with bad credit, do you ever see people that just like should not buy a car? Like, have you ever talked them out of it? Like, and just said, maybe you guys need to go to something else and get a cash car, or maybe this isn't there, or do you just let people do whatever they kind of want to do?
It comes up all the time. And in this economy in the last 2 years, it only comes up more and more. There's tons of people that come in that try to buy cars they have no business buying. And when I say that, I mean as far as when I pull the credit, see what their income is, see what they have going out. And, they're on, speaking of Lexus, a used Lexus, let's say a used 2021 ES sedan, and they can buy a used Camry from me for $9,000 less, and then you show it to them. I don't want a Camry. You know what I mean? So at the end of the day, they're almost the same car, a little more soundproofing, little, this, that, little things.
Right.
But ideally, they're almost the same car, but they, can't bring themselves to drive A, B, or C. They want that. And there's times I tell people all the time, why do we need a third row SUV? You're 22 years old. You're just out of college. You have no kids. You have no dog. What are we doing? But they just really want that Telluride or that Palisade. They want what they want, and that's fine. But one bad hiccup in their life, one medical thing, they're screwed. So I'll explain it to them as nice as I can. Once again, my job at the end of the day is to sell a car, though. So I might try to steer them and explain a few things that lead them that direction. And sometimes they'll go, well, let me drive this other one just for fun. That save that you're talking about, that's like $9,000 cheaper. And sometimes they ink up right away. Most of the time though, they do, like you said, what they want. And they say, yeah, but I got to have that one with the black wheels and the black. And yeah, at some point I just move on with life and ride it up,
Yeah.
But it's crazy. The average new car payment in 2025 was around $750.
Oh, geez. Wow.
That doesn't mean brand new car. That's just the average car payment. So it's obscene out there. It's obscene.
Yeah. I mean, I've gotten offers from my truck from the dealership that I bought it from. Mm-hmm. For more than I paid for the used truck.
Absolutely.
What? Why? Yeah. And then I started looking at the pricing, and I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not. Nope. This thing will run until it dies, and I'll fix it until it won't be fixed anymore, and then it'll go off to the scrapyard.
Yeah, drive it till it explodes. They're too much money. You know, it should be a, you know, I need to get to work. I need to get here and there. You know, but of course, you know, people, you know, want to look good. Want to make sure, you know, they've made it. They're doing great.
Yeah, even if they haven't.
Yeah. And for some people, I get it. You know, some people, I get it. You know, the person that's selling million-dollar houses might look a little better and, you know, a Lexus or something than, you know, an old beat up Camry. So to each their own.
Sure. Sure. So
go ahead.
I was going to say, what's like the funniest sale you've ever made? Like, just imagine you've had some pure gold for comedy there, but
I've had some great ones, but I will tell you, if you just, like, if I really just listen to your question, it comes to me immediately. And it was the first, month of me getting in the business at that tiny Ford store with my brother. I got hired there, like I said, just because my brother was there, and I met a manager out back having a beer one night. And I sold cars for 2 months. That's it. And I went right into being a finance manager. So I'm maybe a month in, maybe 2 months in as a finance manager. And I got stuck with closing one night. And we're at a tiny podunk. I mean, I'm in Mayberry. I'm in Titusville, Florida. I'm at a tiny Ford store that sells, you know, 70 cars a month or something. Nothing. Which back then for that area was great, by the way. And I'm closing up one night. All the salespeople are gone. I go to walk outside. I light my cigarette. I start locking all these gates and doors and shit. And this old guy pulls in. Well, I say old guy, probably my age now, but I was, you know, 20, 21. Whips in this old construction truck, welding truck, you know, that he had made, ripped off the back, put a flatbed on it, put all his gears, tanks, everything. And my dad was a welder. So I immediately went, oh, what is this guy doing? You know, shit, it's 10 after. What is it? So I think I'm just going to walk out, say hi real quick, give him a card for his salesman, you know, maybe get his name and number, hand it off to somebody in the morning. He comes walking up to me and says, I really need to look at a truck. And I said, brother, everybody's gone. I'm a finance guy. You know what I mean? But if you want to drive a truck, I'm happy to go grab a key and unblock that lot and you can drive it and we'll figure it out. And I'm thinking I'm going to let him drive real quick. I'm going to go hang out, you know, on the phone for a few minutes. So I unblock the lot, pull this exact F-150. He's up to see. And he said, can I drive? I said, well, of course. So I put a dealer tag on it. I stayed at the store and let him go. He came back 10 minutes later and said, yep, this is the one, man. And I said, okay, well, when do you want to wrap up? You know, and he goes, well, I kind of need to do it now. And I said, well, shit. Yeah, you know what? I guess I can do that. So I just brought him into my finance office and said, hey, here's the MSRP. You do have this rebate and this right now. And, you know, he said, perfect. He goes, how much are we talking? So I just turned my screen and showed him. And I don't remember the number now. He was buying, I think, a 2000 or 2001 Lariat F-150, whatever it was. I want to say, going by memory, it was about 40 grand. All in, done, out the door. Expensive truck for them.
That was quite a bit back then, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he said, okay, well, that's kind of what I was thinking. And I said, all right, let me get your driver's license and stuff. And I'm still thinking at some point he's going to say, what's the payment going to be? Or, you know, and so I start doing paperwork. And I said, how are you paying for this thing anyway, Carl, or whatever his name was? And he said, cash. And I just kept going, thinking still he means he's going to write a check, you know, because a lot of people say cash, but they don't pull $40,000 out of their ass, you know. So we start signing, you know, he's a smoker, I'm a smoker. At some point, we walk out to get something out of his truck. We both have a cigarette, and I didn't even notice it, but he brought a little paper bag with him. So we get back in my office, we finish the last few things, I do his tag. And I said, all right, well, let's handle the money. And he sets this brown paper bag on my desk that he had grabbed out of the truck. He had went. So obviously, you know, you don't have to be a Subway sandwich artist to figure out where this is going. So I tear the bag open. There's $43,000-something in there, all in hundreds. He had went on the gambling boat a day or two before and hit some jackpot. They paid him in cash. He had been driving around with it under his seat in his truck, he said. So I take his 40 grand or whatever it was, 39, right around 40, and I take it. And I let him leave after I counted it all. I counted it again for another fucking hour. And then I'm thinking, okay, well, now I got to go. It's almost 10 o'clock at night. We closed at 8. And there's no safe or nothing. You know, I'm thinking, what the hell am I supposed to do with 40 grand? So I called my owner and just said, hey, Ricky, I hate to bother you. And he goes, something happened? Everything? I said, yeah, it's good. I sold a truck. What do you mean you sold a truck? I said, well, you know, guy came in late. I said, anyway, is it cool if I run by the house? And he goes, yeah. He goes, what do you need? I go, I'm not driving home with 40. He goes, what? She took 40 grand. I go, well, yeah, I sold a truck. What'd you sell it for? And I said, MSRP. And I gave him his 1,000 rebate or 1,500, whatever. And he goes, oh, my God. He still thought I was joking until I showed up, knocked on his door, and handed him a sack, you know, this big. And he was like, dude, you're insane. But, yeah, that was the weirdest one, because looking at that guy, you wouldn't think, you know, he had enough money for a bag of cashews, you know. So you just never know. That's the funniest one, because it just went down so fast, so fast. The next one, which is much quicker, I had a woman that was dead set on this weird BMW, and she came in and she drove it, and I tried to steer her away from it because I knew it was seeping oil from every orifice known to man. And I told her, just know these things you're going to end up doing, A, B, C. You're going to end up redoing those gaskets. I said, it's a lot of work. You know, you're going to spend $3,000-$4,000 right away. Her friend came, looked at it. This thing's a turd, you know, Shelly, Shelby, whatever. You don't need to buy this. Everybody, you know, we all tried to tell her, and she still wrote a check, you know, and I felt bad because 2 days later I saw it on the side of the road in the grass, you know, broke down, you know. So her best friend told her, don't do it. I, as the salesman, not as a manager, said, don't do it. Don't come look at this. But, you know, she wanted what she wanted. So those two are the ones that stick out.
Those are good
if
ones.
You can't afford a new BMW, you certainly can't afford a used BMW either. So,
oh, absolutely not. Yeah, absolutely.
I would actually say you're probably more likely to be able to afford it new.
Yeah. Those cars to me, and you know, everybody's got their thing in their car, but I would lease one. There's a lot of cars I would lease that I would never buy. And that one is certainly one of those.
Yeah, I know you did a review on a Mercedes, like a GLK or CLK. I don't know, some kind of SUV thing. It didn't even have a sunroof. I found was kind of weird, but I could tell you were kind of going a little bit low key to maybe steer people away from buying such a thing. But I'm sure there's a market for that. People just want to see that emblem on the front radio.
Yeah, absolutely.
On the front grille.
It was a video I did, right? On the GLK. Yeah. I remember the car because it was not too long ago. Yeah, that one was really weird. That was a weird bird because I don't think it had navigation. I don't think it had a backup camera, no sunroof. It was a really weird one. But so many people love those cars. There's so many times I do videos on these cars, and I hate the cars. I mean, I hate them. And I try to normally convey how I really feel about the car because
you can
kind of talk
with that one a little bit.
Yeah. It's normally you can, and people, you know, will message me, "Hi, you're supposed to be a salesman." I go, "Well, you know, I'm a reporter. You know, I bring the information to you and just lay it upon you, and you know, you're going to make whatever decision you want." You know, but yeah, if you don't have the money for a new one, exactly, you know. And I tell people, just, you know, look at that payment and just go ahead and add a few $100 to it, because that's how much you're going to need to put away to remotely keep this thing on the road, especially when you're looking at a 2012 or a 15, Right. Unless you're just mechanically inclined. Some people are. That's their thing. They get off on, well, I could fix it. Well, good. But most of us can't.
Yeah. I have a hard time with that because I'm the mechanic guy. And, you know, people on the Lexus forum, you know, they're asking about this and that. And in my mind, like a brake job ain't no big deal. But these days, you know, it's like $800 per axle or whatever, you know, the water pump. I think I bought a water pump for $100. You bring it to the dealer, it's like two grand. It's crazy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And worth every penny.
If it ain't working, it's worth it.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. If it got towed in, then the shop rates and hourly are just insane, you know, and it's not because the techs are greedy or none of that. You know, they're not making a whole lot more than they did 10 years ago. And that's why so many are leaving in a mass exodus. It's very hard to find good talent in the shop right now.
I'm sure that flat rate pay makes it a little bit more difficult to find somebody. You know, you got to work fast and you got to be competent at the same time.
Yeah, and so many, you know, a lot of the older techs that have done it a long time have gotten out. Some, you know, I know a few that have went and started lawn businesses, went to work for pest control companies, you know, and these are guys that have $100,000 worth of tools. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I don't mean 50 grand. I mean, $100,000 tied up and tools and stuff. And they're like, enough. I can't do it. I can't freaking do it. So I feel terrible for them. It's a rough go. And, you know, finding a good diag guy is very hard. Anybody, you know, we can hire to, and they can throw parts at some, but that doesn't work. You know, you need a good diag guy, and they're very hard to find. And when you do, you just got to pay them, and dealers don't want to. I know that's a shocker. So, yeah, it's a sad state of affairs in a lot of service departments right now with all that knowledge going out the door. Those guys have just said, I'm going to do something different.
Is it mainly impacting the dealerships or because, you know, we have a near us a bunch of, you know, mom and pop, shops that, you know, mechanics shops, they all seem to be more than busy enough.
You know, I don't know. I strictly know the dealership side of it. So as far as what's happening at your local, you know, 10 bay place that everybody in town knows and every, you know, they got a great name. I would guess those guys are pretty happy and eating well, but at the dealerships, you know, you're paying almost $200 in some places over per shop hour. And of course they're not, you know, most of them aren't even getting $30 of that per hour. Most of them are at about $22 an hour to $28 to turn a wrench. So they see the bill. They know this was a $4,000 job. They know the book said it took 8 hours to do. They know they charged the customer for 8 hours, and the guy did it in four. You know, right. And there's still nothing extra for it in him. So, yeah.
The dealerships probably, I know they are. They're making a markup on the parts as well. Because you can buy the parts much cheaper over the counter or even through the internet now than if you're buying them over the counter, or even more if you're getting a job done. They charge you full retail plus sometimes.
Yeah, everything's Keystone, and a dealer could make way more money. Some do, but a new car dealership, you know, if you're getting, you know, whatever replaced on your Hyundai Sonata, they're going to buy a Hyundai part. You know, could they go get the same freaking part made in the same factory without the stamp for quite a bit cheaper? They could. So, you know, at the dealership level, a new car dealership, yeah, it's a lot of blue sky. It's a lot of blue sky.
Now, I have seen a lot online because for a little while I was contemplating getting a newer car, not a new car, but a newer car. Actually, that's how I found you, because I was watching the RX350 review that you did. I was thinking of getting like a 2015, you know, it's 10 years old, something like that. But I forget where it was even going now. But anyway, I mean, as far as these cars go, they're the prices on them, they're absolutely ridiculous to me.
I know.
I don't know.
Yeah, I deal with it every day. Trust me. What did you end up getting Lexus wise? You mentioned you had a, you got a Lexus. What did you buy?
I've had a 2007 RX for the last 10 years. So, and I fix it myself. So, it runs perfect. It's just, you know, being in Florida, the paint looks like garbage now. It's, you know, the clear coat's gone. Then the dashboard's kind of getting nasty, but
did you watch the video on the GX? Did you see my video on the GX 470 the other day?
I did. That made me sad that person would actually trade that in. And the sadder part is, I know you probably can't tell me, but I can only imagine what they actually gave him. Not even on paper, but in the real, like, what he actually got for that as a trade in. Probably not very much, I'm assuming.
Take a guess. I'll tell you. I'll tell you what we wholesaled it for and what we gave him on paper for it.
I would.
Or do you want me to just tell you?
I don't know. I wouldn't think they'd probably give him more than $1,500, to be honest with you.
$6,000.
Really?
We gave him six. That? Yeah. Yeah. Because and here's why. And you can Google all this stuff too, but your Mannheim, what's called MMR, Mannheim Market Report, was over $8,800 on that. So that's a car that, believe it or not, I know it sounds obtuse and obscene. I can't think of any other word that goes with that. But retail, even with 250,000 miles like it had, is still almost $12,000.
Wow.
Retail.
It had a book this thick of maintenance records for it. That can't be that common, I wouldn't think.
It's next to impossible to get. A lot of people talk about, I have everything. They never bring it. So you hear about it. I've got every record at the hub. Well, why didn't you bring it with you? This guy brought it with him. So it's a one-owner Florida car with 43 or 48, I think it's in the video, service histories. Every receipt for everything since day one, down to light bulbs and bullshit that nobody even cares about, he had them. So when you see one owner, good facts, even with 250K, we hit him on paper, I think at $4,000 or 4,500. And he said $6,000's the number. So we eventually gave him six and we ACV'd it, actual cash value, you know, what the real money is, at $6,000, and wholesaled it for exactly $6,000. So we ended up just washing out of it. I would have much rather retailed it to somebody, but a big new car store is just not going to put their name on the back of a car like that with 200 and something thousand miles. And I get it. I wouldn't want the headache either, because even the customer that comes in and says, I'll give you, you know, 7,900 out the door, and we get to capture a deal and maybe make a grand, whatever. As soon as a light comes on, even though they signed 22 pieces of paper with you saying, as is, you know, wholesale public, they will go to the internet. And this place sold me a piece of, you know, people have no context that, yeah, they signed nine things and they said they were handy and they knew all about it and they could fix this and this. All you see now when you go to shop that dealer is, man, this guy bought a Lexus, I guess. He won't tell you it was an 06 in the Google review. He won't tell you it had 260 clicks on it. So I see both sides. You know, I think that would have made a great sale for somebody, and somebody local would, you know, have it. But yeah, some mechanic, somebody bought it, I'm sure, and, you know, and is going to keep it and throw a diesel in it and, you know, something, who God knows, drive that thing another into the ground. But yeah, it was mint.
That was very nice.
It was mint.
Much better than that. What was that red Hyundai with the black door on it that
had, oh, like, yeah,
wipers in the back seat or something?
Yeah, the little Sonata the other day, the hybrid with the murderous with the murderous headrest, blood stains or something on the headrest. Yeah, it was everything. Cat food. We had a couple diapers wrapped up in a bag in the back seat. Oh, yeah, buddy, I bring it all to you, whether you want it or not.
Okay, now I got to hear it.
Who has to get in that thing and drive it around back when they actually sign the paper? Like, who gets the job of doing that fun stuff?
Oh, the salesman. Always the salesman. Yeah. and, you know, used car managers, and a lot of times especially at the other dealership I was at before here, where I really did a bunch of videos. You know, we appraised our own trades and stuff. So, you know, I will always say to those people in the business when I do some of these videos, some are for, you know, just consumers, some are for, you know, the people in the biz that watch my channel. You got to drive your trades. You got to drive every possible trade in. You have to put hands on it. And so many people appraise cars from the desk or from the window or from walking around it. And yeah, that's one there that, you know, a used car manager or me, whoever's on the desk that day, whoever's available, hey, just go put eyes on this thing. I think I already know it's a $500 car or a dollar car, as that one was. Yeah, the salesman gets stuck with it.
Was that just a matter of taking it off their hands? I can't imagine they would give them much for that thing at all.
Swapping
the tag.
I think that deal, we probably showed them $500 to $1,000 for the car on paper. We probably ACV'd it for a dollar, literally, like $1 is what we really put in the car. Our poor detailers will have to clean it and try to make it look remotely presentable. Excuse me. It'll just go to the auction and whatever it sells for that day it does. And it'll probably sell for $500. But by the time, you know, the dealership costs and bills that car out, we pay detail $150, $200 to clean it. We paid $70 to get it to the auction. Then there's sale fee. So, yeah, we might sell the car for $500, $600 to some, you know, buy here, pay here, or some mechanic shop right. that just wants to steal these parts out of it. But we'll net a check for, you know, $175. You know?
That's crazy.
It's not worth the time to mess with. But, you know, they can transfer their tag off it, you know, and there's $300 right there off their next deal. So,
I mean, they could probably show a little bit of tax incentive, right, for a trade-in. Well, I guess that's the biggest advantage of a trade-in, or is it? Do you think it's better just to sell it outright privately?
You know, a car like that, it doesn't matter, because if we gave them a grand for it, their tax credit's $70 at best, you know.
Right.
But when you talk about, hey, I might trade my truck in, they offered me $10,000 for it. Well, you're really getting $10,700, you know, by trading it. So it depends on the car. It depends on the deal. Sometimes it's better to sell it outright yourself. And sometimes it's better to trade it. So it's a case by case. I couldn't tell you, oh, you're always better to sell it yourself, because there's a bunch of times you're not. But there's definitely times where I look at people and go, dude, you don't want to trade that. I only want $2,000 for it. And I go, and I'll give it to you. I'm telling you, though, you have money in the bank. Yeah, I go, okay, then keep it. If you don't want to deal with it, have your son take pictures, put it on Marketplace, and go sell that car. It's going to bring $4,000 or $5,000. I'm going to give you $1,000 for it right now, but I'm just telling you, we're shipping it to the auction. You can do much better. You know, it's very hard to find ABC, whatever it is. And sometimes they listen to me, and sometimes they go, I just don't want to deal with it. And I go, no problem. Done. Let's go.
There are people that just don't want to deal with it. I mean, just selling not car things on Marketplace, it's kind of ridiculous and crazy. Or worst, and we've talked about this before, is giving away stuff for free that –
oh, yeah.
Forget it. It's way easier just to throw it right in the garbage can and forget about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Those people are never happy.
No. That was an exercise in futility, to say the least.
Yeah. You're better off just to go donate it somewhere. You know,
exactly.
it's not even worth it, because that the person you gave it to is going to go, I can't believe it didn't even. Hey, did you not have the cord? You know, they just keep messaging
like you. You put something on there, and they're like, well, can you deliver it? I'm like, dude, it's free. No, right. I can't deliver it. And then, like, it's like 50 miles away. I'm like, no, I can't.
I'll give you $10.
Right, exactly. No.
It's everything.
I do have one burning question before I forget, and I'm going to ask you right now.
Sure.
Now, it's been a while since I bought a new car. Like, I think the last one was in, like, 2001. We bought a Durango, and to put it in perspective, I think it was like $25,000 for a brand new Durango back then, like something like that, you know? So it's been a long time.
But yeah, anyways, it's been a minute.
What are the sales guys doing when they do that inevitable, well, let me talk to my manager, and then they disappear for like 10 minutes. Is that just to get you to sit in there and like to give in, or are they actually like doing something or just going out back and smoking cigarettes, or
it's all of the above? So at the end of the day, you have to realize, especially like where you were at that day, you were at a brand new Dodge, Chrysler, Jeep, Ram store. At a big new car store, 99% of your salespeople, they have no control over your deal. Their input means nothing. So a store like I was just at before, though, or a big used car store that isn't a chain like CarMax or something like that, just a big dealer in your area, they've been there 20 years, they got four sales guys, they, you know, sell 50 to 80 used cars, that salesman might have a little more say in your deal. But when you're buying a brand new Durango, when you're buying a brand new Mercedes-Benz, that salesperson's input means nothing. What they think means nothing. What they feel means nothing. So when they seriously say, you know what, so 40 grand is what earns your bit, let me go ask him. They have no idea what we are going to say in that office. And when you say, yeah, they disappear for 15 minutes, you have to remember that as managers working a sales desk, it's one of two things. We're either slam busy and he's waiting in line for his turn to work to renegotiate his deal with us from the pencil we just gave him 8 minutes ago, and now he's already back. So you have that store where everybody's busy working, and he's got to wait. Then you have the store where the guy working the deal is looking at a college football game. He's on the phone with his girlfriend. We're ordering lunch. What's for dinner? Where are we going for drinks? So you sitting there waiting, believe it or not, is not a tactic. It's not a, you know, it's literally luck of the draw for who you have at that store working your deal. And that salesman is literally a pawn for us. We will say, go back out and say this. Go back out and here, show him these. You know what I mean? At some point, though, at a good store, after once, twice of that, we just take it over. I'll just go out and grab the person and sit down with them and, hey, you got a minute? Let's go sit mile. What are we, you know, and I'll reiterate a few key points and know where I'm at in the deal, and I'll just try to close it up for the kid, you know, or the guy, whatever. But yeah, no, it's not one of those things where we're all outside smoking, laughing, pushing each other in the bushes going, oh, they're still sitting in there. You know, doesn't mean we haven't done that to people before. You know, there's definitely been some customers that just rubbed us the wrong way from the jump. And yes, you know, we're not in a hurry, but as a whole, it's literally takes that long for that person to, you know, be able to get numbers and come back out to you.
Are you at that point? I'm sure you've experienced, you know, you have enough experience. Can you pick out somebody that's going to actually sign on the paper, or is somebody just kicking tires and wasting your time, or is it hard to tell?
You know, years ago, it was a lot easier for me. Because like I said, you know, customers were a lot more forthcoming and just saying, hey, I'm going to come in. I know you already told me we can't get to 30 grand out the door, Smitty, but if we can, I'll sign tonight. If not, I'm really going to have to think on it. Now, like I was saying earlier about the internet and getting your best price online, we have a ton of people that will email me, call me, text me. Hey, if you can get this Elantra N model to me at 40,000 out the door, I will come tonight. And I say, okay, let me look at it. And then I tell them, yes, I can do it. What time? Oh, it might be tomorrow, the next day. So we get a lot of pump faking now too. So much, okay. You know, they want to take my numbers and just reshop them. Where years ago, a customer would come in like you were talking about with that four square, and they would want a copy. Let me get a picture of it. And they would go shop you. Now people don't even come in the store. They do all that online. I'll do business today on that white, this or that with this package at 50 grand. And then you say, done. Okay, well, let me just, you know. So you have a lot more pump faking now going on. So I used to be able to call it pretty good. But now it's kind of like me putting a number on a car. There's times where we will go look at something old, kind of like that Lexus we talked about earlier. Four people there that day all had a different number on that vehicle. Some people said it's worth $1,000. Another guy said it's worth $8,000. Another guy says it's worth $6,000. You know what I mean? None of us know. None of us really know. And any dealership that
somebody's willing to pay for it, right?
That is true. But it's just an educated guess. And all of us, you know, will use all these analytics, Manheim Market Report, this, that, oh, it should do this. Nobody really knows. Mm. All that stuff is, you know, you could hit it on the head.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. I was just saying you could hit it right on the head. You could be off by $3,000. So you just got to make the best guess you can with the information you have and let the Lord figure it out at the end of the month.
That MMR that you're talking about, that's a dealer only thing, right? You have to like get a subscription. Yeah. That's not like a KBB. Is KBB even close to giving people an idea of what their car is worth?
Not really. No. They're not terrible. There's definitely other sites that are way worse. But it's changed a lot. So when a lot of people come in, well, KBB said this, KBB. And, you know, a lot of times as salespeople and managers, we want to say, well, go sell your car to them then. Or go buy your car from them. I haven't seen a Kelley Blue Book dealership around here. But, hey, if you can find one, yeah, I would go buy it for $20 then. Absolutely. You know, and they go, well, you can't. And I go, exactly. So a lot of that stuff is kind of good for – it's kind of like a Carfax. And you saw my video, I'm sure, on that. Carfax is awesome. Carfax is one of the best tools we have. But it's not the Bible. No. Doesn't mean everything's right on there. But it'll give you a good gauge. It's not going to be wrong with where it was registered. It's not going to be wrong with how many owners. You know, those are the things you look at when people say, yeah, but I got a Carfax one time and it had been totally. Yeah, that shit's going to happen. But, you know, at least you knew up front if it was from Boston or if it was from Arizona, you know, if it had service history at the dealership, or if it was fly by night all over the place. Those are the things you look at a Carfax for, not, you know, oh, it's been totaled this, that stuff. You know, there's a bunch of tools. You got to use all of them, put them all together and make your decision as a whole based on 5 or 6 different platforms, you know?
Right.
But yeah, KBB doesn't do a bunch for me.
I wouldn't think so. I remember because my mother used to work at a bank, and she used to get the little black books, and she, you know, the expired ones. And that was, you know, like back in the day.
It
probably doesn't exist anymore, but
it's all online now. But you know what? I bet they still make the little weekly books and the monthly truck. But it wouldn't surprise me if some guy, you know, in Georgia somewhere still has them in his pocket because he'd rather have those than the actual, you know. Than using the app.
Missed the old days. We had the Auto Trader magazine. I'm sure you've seen that in Florida. You know, we all had that. I bought a few cars that way, and like you said, the newspaper and stuff. And
We had Cycle Trader, Auto Trader. Mm-hmm. You had a magazine for all of it. That was the deal, man. But now it's all, you know, it's all digital, and you know, so be it.
Right.
But yeah, I remember those days for sure.
What do you think about the added, I see a lot of the, like, I look more than, I'm really not in that market to buy, but I look and it kind of like turns me off when I see these advertised prices, especially from the big dealers. And then they have all these fees like tacked on the end, and like, you got to read the real fine print to even see it in there. It's like, what exactly is like just a dealer fee or, you know, the dock fee or whatever kind of. Sometimes it's a couple, $3,000 added on the bottom line.
Absolutely. So, yeah, you always when you're researching and you're seeing all these prices online, you always want to get the Hubble telescope out and look at the bottom, you know, because that's what you're going to need to be able to see it. At the end of the day, I can only speak for Florida where, you know, where we're at. But That used car dealership I was at just before going back to wearing the shirt and tie every day and running new stuff again. That's the only dealer that I know of used car wise that doesn't charge a dealer fee. We have one new car. No, forgive me. There's two that I know about in Central Florida now that don't charge any fees. But other than that, all of them have a dealer fee. And typically it's around $1,000 doc fee, dealer fee. It's pure profit for the dealer. So anybody that says, well, you know, it helps recondition. It's, you know, it pays the, keeps the lights on and the, it pays the girls in accounting. And no, absolutely not. It's pure profit. Pure profit. Anybody that tells you different is, you know, full of shit. So, and then, you know, the other thing, you know, is the electronic filing fee. So, you know, there's a fee to do your tag work, you know, so we charge you what it costs to transfer your plate. And then we charge an electronic filing fee on top of that to do the same thing. You know, so it's more profit, you know, but you got to remember dealers are fighting over, especially at new car dealerships. We're, you know, when dealers look at you and say, I'm losing $2,000, I'm losing $3,000 to sell you this car. 9 times out of 10, that's true.
Really?
So I know people don't want to believe that, but that's true. We will take a car and sell it for $2,000 under invoice. Now, yes, the dealer's going to get kickbacks for what's called holdback, pick something. There's a few places a dealer's going to make money that most people don't know about. But on paper, for us as the salesperson, as the sales manager, that has nothing to do with us. We don't. You know, so when we take a real $2,000 loser, $3,000 loser, it costs us money out of our paycheck to take that deal. But we look at everything on a monthly basis. We have to sell so many new, so many of this, so many of that. So yeah, you know, we're going to try to make it back wherever we can, you know, in dealer fee, doc fee, ELT fee, electronic filing, all those fees are just a way to help us do that. And yeah, they're everywhere, and some are more than others. You get into big cities, Miami, certain parts of Orlando, the dealer fee will absolutely take your breath away.
So what's the difference between that? Hey, so I had a friend who was a car salesman. I have a few of them, but back in the day. And one of them, a friend of mine named Darren, sold me a vehicle. And I was like, yeah, no, I'm not paying, blah, blah, blah. And finally he calls me up. He's like, dude, I got to make my number for the month. If you come down, I'll take a mini. And I was like, what's a mini? And he goes, you have to make $500 on the car. That's it. So it's $500 over invoice, and that's what they call a mini. What's the difference between that and the losing money? Because my understanding was there was always that mini buffer. There was that. This is where we end up at the worst case, right?
Yeah, so it's different for every car. In all my years, if somebody ever said, you know, hey, I'm taking a mini deal, it just means that the salesman's only getting a flat. Okay. So it has nothing to do with the gross to the store. Like, hey, we made $800, we lost $800. A mini deal, in all of my experience, literally means the salesperson is just saying, hey, I had a home run the other day on the van, but then I took too many deals. It means there wasn't enough gross for him to make more than his minimum guarantee per car. So on average, most salespeople are going to make anywhere from $150 to $175 to sell you a car. That's it.
Wow.
That's it. They're guaranteed no matter what.
More than that, yeah.
Yeah. So when that customer online beat you up or in person in the showroom and says, I'm paying this, I don't pay this. And we finally, after 3 hours, shake hands at 35,000 out the door. And we all look at each other and go, that's a $3,000 loser, you know, and they're writing a check. We have no way to make any money from the bank or anything. That salesman's going to have a mini deal. He's going to get paid $175. That's it. So that's what that was. Yeah, that was him just saying, hey, I'm going to take a mini deal, meaning I'm not going to make $400, $500, $800 in my pocket for selling you this car.
Okay, all right. It worked out. It was, you know, it was where I wanted to be. So I was a happy camper, but yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So very, your guys' business model is monthly, on a monthly cycle basis. Is there a better time to buy a car than other times, like the end of the month or the end of the year, or maybe when a new model comes out or something like that?
Sure. That part hasn't really changed at all. Best time is always the end of the year, the last week of the year. We're always chasing goals and objectives every month. So if you said, brother, I can't wait to the end of the year. You don't understand. I got literally 2 weeks to do this. My truck was totaled out and State Farm's only given me, you know, 14 days to, you know, then go the last day of the month, you know, and negotiate your best deal. We're always still chasing stuff. So if you can do it 2 or 3 days before the end of the month, you're probably going to get even a better deal because we still have, you know, we still are thinking we're going to hit this and, you know, we'll be more aggressive. Last day of the month at, you know, an hour before we close, if we know we're not hitting, we're not going to be as excited to jump through hoops for you, you know. Or if we've already hit our objective, there's no reason for us to pull our pants down and jump through hoops because we've already hit, you know, whatever those bogeys are. They're different and there's a lot of them. But just to answer it in a nutshell, if you said time is on my side, I'm in no hurry. Last week of the year. Always.
Yeah, that's, I think, true with just about any kind of a sales position, right? It's the hockey stick. That's what we all, it's a hockey stick on its side, right? And this is your year, and then this is the last 2 weeks of December. You know what I mean?
It's just,
it's a truism.
Yeah, the yearly projections. And, you know, it's even better for you because, believe it or not, as soon as the first comes around, your car's a year older. Yeah. And some people don't buy into that. But trust me, that shit is true. Yeah. That's not a sales thing. We just say to you, you know, even us in the business, I will always make sure that if I'm even thinking of getting her a new one, I drive old pieces of shit. I don't care. But mom is always in something new. And if I release, you know, whatever, a Telluride. I think I leased her a Outlander last. I can't even remember what the hell I bought her. I want those done at a certain time too. You know, eventually people catch up to me and go, dude, you need the ride off. And I go, okay. And then that's the only reason I do it, you know? End of the year typically is when it's going to be your best favor, especially new car.
I have to imagine, right? There's sales incentives, there's markers to hit, et cetera. When you hit, say, 100% a goal, after that, is there an accelerator that kicks in? Or if you hit like 125% or something, is there something that, you know, this is more on the actual salesperson's side, but how does that typically work?
Yeah, there's normally bogeys up for us after. So they'll normally have, hey, this is, and it's not typically for salespeople. Their sales pay plan is pretty straightforward. If you sell this many, you get this. If you sell this many, you get this. But for a sales manager and for managers, yes, there's, you know, maybe a new car number of X. And then if you hit 110, 115, 120, and it's different with every make. So, you know, there's certain American car companies, even though they're made in Mexico, that will say, hey, your dealer cash, if you sell, 100 new X is 80 grand. Well, you have to get that number or you get nothing. And there's other ones that say, hey, you got close. So if you don't hit this, we'll give you 60 grand. But I remember working for an American company years ago. And our dealer cash that month it was the last day of the month. And this happened twice to me in like a year. My owner called me and just said, Smitty, I know you're still at the store because I was the finance director. And last day of the month, I'm there. And he goes, what are you driving? And I said, I'm still driving my truck. You know, and he goes, well, have you thought about a new one? And I'd go, oh my God, are we that close? And he'd go, well, we need two more. And I would literally write my own deal at a $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 loser to the store, hard, real money. Because if I wasn't there that night with good credit and able to buy, it could have been $88,000 to them that month or a goose egg.
Mm.
So I have all the power. You called me. I didn't call you. I don't need a new truck. My truck's got 8,000 miles on it. But they know, hey, who can we, you know, the guy sat there all day. They tried to get their number. So they'll call any employee they can that they know can buy. And they'll just go, hey, what do we got to do? And I said, well, I'm going to build it. And I'll tell you what I'm comfortable with doing on this unit. And I go, but just remember, it's 88 grand to you or nothing. So, you know, no dealer would ever want to take an $8,800 real loser. But wow. You know, at 10 o'clock on the last day of the month, you don't really have a choice.
You do when the offset of that is to make, what, $79,000.
Yeah. Yeah. I said, hey, you know, so that killed both of those owners to do that deal for me. And one of them really cared. And the other one goes, I don't give a shit. But you know, I went, hey, you know, I'm one of two people here and I can definitely buy it. The other person, we don't really know. So I go, you can call him and ask him too. Maybe he'll buy the car, you know, but, I was very fortunate then. I had a really good pay plan and I negotiated a demo allowance in my pay plan. So it literally cost me another, I don't know, 150 out of my pocket to drive around in a $50,000 truck, you know, so it wasn't a big deal. Yeah.
I think I heard you mention that your wife's vehicle is leased. Do you think leasing is a viable option for people? Like, I've always thought personally, like, there's no way I would ever lease a vehicle. Like, are there people that works for and it's actually a good option?
Absolutely. So leasing as a whole, I hate. I would never, it would be in my best interest to present a lease to every single person as a salesman, not as manager. But even as a manager, it's true. But as a salesperson, anybody looking at a new car, it would definitely be in my best interest to present a lease and a finance, you know, proposal on every deal. Because the payment is normally way cheaper on a lease. Yeah. And a ton of people at this day and age, and even back in the day, are payment buyers. Me personally, I don't care what I drive. So for me, a lease isn't good. I work a bunch of crazy hours. I travel a bunch. I'm gone a lot. And I can't have my wife and kids in a 2014 Maxima with 158,000 miles like I drive. I'm happy as a goat getting in that car. And she wouldn't care at all. It's not even that she wants something new. She drove a Mercedes for a year when we first got together that I bought her. She didn't even know it was a Mercedes. She's clueless. So she doesn't care, but I can't get that phone call. Hey, I got a light on, or hey, this I'm on the side of the road. I can't just run and go when I want from the store. So, and I have a few other things that I do away from just the car business. So the two great people for a lease are the person that likes to have something new every few years that's under warranty. And, you know, just once something gets that itch that has to be scratched every 2 to 3 years, lease the car. So that's why I do that. I like having that write off, which a lot of laws have changed now. So I don't even get what I used to get anymore, really. But it's just a cheaper payment. It's cheaper for me to budget. And I know she's always in something new. And I am kind of that car person still where I like her to have something new. It just makes me feel good. And the other person that leasing is great for is the older person that's on a fixed income. You know, they remember these $200 payments and shit from 10, 15 years ago that don't exist anymore. And the only way you're remotely going to get there is on a lease. So, a lot of older people on fixed income, I highly recommend a lease. I wouldn't tie up a bunch of cash down on it. But there's plenty of cars you can lease for, you know, $1,200, $1,500, $1,800 down and have a $300 payment. And it's a lot of car. And you can't buy that car for $300 a month. So when you're older and you're only getting $2,600 a month or $1,800 in some cases a month, Why would you even think of signing your name to a $400, $500 payment a month? You're just asking for trouble. So, but other than that, just, younger people coming in, hey, maybe I'll lease. That'll get me the this vehicle that's way out of my budget, make it work. I look at him and go, hey, man, just, stop.
Are they but so many when you go to return the leases as far as condition and stuff?
Not really. Years ago, I remember Ford on RCLs, red carpet leases, kind of picking stuff apart. Yeah. So when you go to lease a car, you can buy what's called wear care. Every company calls it something different, but most of us call it like wear and tear, wear care. So you can spend $700-$800 and you can do a ton of damage and bring that car back and not get a bill. But at the end of the day, if I'm a Toyota person, I'm a Lexus person, I'm a whatever person you are, and you always lease, as soon as you go back to them and just go, hey, I know the tires are shot. I know it's going to need, I don't give a shit. I'm not spending any money on it. So if you keep my payment the same and roll me into a new, whatever, 4Runner, whatever, I'll sign again. They'll eat it. They'll figure it out. You won't get a bill. So I tell people, I have a lot of friends that just lease after lease, and they're over their miles. They're over this. This got scratched. I go, don't even worry about it. Well, should I buy more miles on the next one? I go, for what? Toyota's going to figure it out, dude. Or whoever, even Kia, whoever. They're going to figure it out. So I would never tell anybody to worry about that. Now, if you switch brands and you bring it back, you lease that Toyota and it's a 36,000-mile lease and you bring it back to them with 52,000 on it and a couple whiskey dents and it smells like an ashtray, and you don't get another one from them, absolutely you're going to get a bill. 100% when you tell them, oh, I went and got a Ford. Yeah, buckle up. You're going to love that bill. But if you buy another one from them, they'll absorb it. Most times.
Interesting. Interesting. While I'm thinking about it, what do you think about, I guess during the COVID times, all these dealers that were putting these, what would they call, market adjustment?
Yes.
On the Mulroney sticker, is that what it is? And doing all these ridiculous things and charging people, I don't even know what interest rates on that stuff. And people were paying it. I don't understand why.
Yeah, those were some of our best years in the car business so far. The old COVID, the old shortage. It was an interesting time, and we kept getting in so many new salespeople. Older salespeople were going home and telling their sons and friends, I made $25,000 last month selling cars. And all these people came out of the woodwork to come sell cars. And they were getting $2,000-$4,000 checks a week, commissions. And man, I can't believe I haven't been doing this. And I would look at them and just say, save it. The market's going to correct itself. You are not this good. Trust me. You're a $500 a week guy, so don't go patting yourself on the back. So yeah, there's some truth to it and there's a lot of bullshit to it. So to put COVID in a nutshell, I was fortunate at that time to be working for one of the owners I worked for a very long time. He's got several stores and I worked at all of them. Sometimes I would get pissed off at this one and say, I'm going to go to this store. That was his too, and I'd go work there. But I was a finance guy for this dealership, and then I saw what was going on, and they wanted to cut everybody's hours. And I went, well, shit, if it's going to be this, I'll just sell. So I came out of being a finance manager director, and I went right on the floor selling cars. And those were two of the best those 2 years were better than some of my finance manager years, just selling. And I only worked 30 hours a week, maybe. And I only sold, 12, 15, 17 cars a month. I wasn't a 30 car a month guy. I didn't work anywhere near those hours. And it was COVID and we didn't have inventory. So yes, we charged an arm and a leg over for a lot of cars. A lot of it was dealer greed. But some of it was, we literally couldn't get vehicles, and you have dealerships that have tons of employees. And if you're used to selling 350 new cars, well, 350 cars and 270 of them being brand new, ABCX, whatever you want to call it, let's call it Kias. And all of a sudden you're selling 59 new Kias and you're used to making X and now you're not. So some of it was literally to be able to cover the overhead and stuff. And other, you know, for a while, it was kind of like, no, this makes sense to some level. And after a while, once we started getting tons of vehicles in again, it just was a money grab, you know. But, you know, we had people literally calling us from out of state happy to pay $10,000 over sticker for a car that was $48,000 MSRP. Happy. Wow. Now, when I say happy, I just mean where their local dealer was in Virginia, they wanted 15 over. So they would go, you know, I'll pay the 10 over and fly down and pick it up and drive it home. It was the weirdest thing. And I don't even know what made people really want to do it. A lot of the trade-ins I got at that time weren't cars on their last leg or nothing. These weren't people that were like, yeah, I just totaled out my whatever and shit, I guess I got to get some. I guess I'm paying over. These were people trading in cars that were a year too old, you know? And I'm just thinking, hey, I can do this at $5,000 over sticker, you know? Oh, gee, let me think about it. And they'd call me an hour later and counter me and go, can we do it at $4,000? Can I just pay $4,000 over? And I'm just thinking, why the hell would they even do that? But they did. We didn't have to, you know. I mean, those are the cars at that point, for whatever reason, just sold themselves. And that's why I was telling those young guys just getting into it, this is not how it is, man. You are not this good. So quit posting pictures of your new car and telling everyone at the bar, oh, I made $20,000. Because you're going to make $4,000 a month here in about a year. You know, you're not that talented. So get over it, you know. Yeah, it was crazy, craziest time I've ever seen in the business. And yeah, so some of it was legit, but a lot of it was not at all.
Hmm. Do you think the market is closer or has it, you know, kind of plateaued and is it normalizing again? Or do you think it's still kind of out of skew? I've been watching used car prices and they do seem like they are on the downward trend a little bit from what I see.
That's kind of what I see too. But you know what? It's like water, man. It's all over the place. It's fluid. So there'll be a month where I can see the auction and see reports and go, all right, shit, we can finally start buying some stuff again at a remotely fair price. And then you get ready and free up some space on floor plan and get ready to go buy a couple $100,000 worth. And that night it's, everybody's raising their hand, you know? And you're going, shit, I'm gonna be so out of whack on this because there's no point in buying it. So there's no rhyme or reason to it, and it just changes nonstop. As a whole, I see prices coming down, but I wouldn't want to tell you. Oh yeah, you know, I see all these other guys. The market, it's terrible out there. You know, these are let it rock. Oh, no one's buying cars. Oh, this is all shot. None of that's true. I don't see any of that where I'm at. I get a cross sale report that we pay a whole lot of money to get that tells me what everybody registered, what they sold, what bank they went. I don't know where these people live or all this. You know, all these cars are sitting. You've got a few makes where cars are a little bit stagnant, but the area we're in Central Florida, we're selling cars. It's a good time to be in the car business.
All right.
Do you sell EVs at all? What do you think of EVs? Or do you think they're going to surpass the regular vehicle? I mean, I have zero interest in any of that myself, but some people
sure
one of those.
I have no interest in EVs whatsoever. And when it was my job to constantly worry about used cars and what went to the auction and what didn't go, I always watched my number on EVs, meaning when I took one in on trade, if I didn't steal it, I was not interested. That market is just a train wreck. I know people swear by these things and love them, and that's great. If you're a Tesla person and, it's the best car, good for you. I'm not saying they're terrible cars. They're junky. I've driven a bunch of them. I actually like a lot of EVs. It's just not something for me. That's all. And the market is so volatile on them. And now that that tax credit went away, you know, that free government money you got just for buying one that we all paid for is gone. Now the market is really up there on them. You know, it's so I have no interest in them. It's definitely not something for me down the road. You know, if I literally could, you know, see as many charging places as I do gas stations, I might entertain it. But it's just not, you know, nothing that I keep up with.
I don't want to keep you too long. Do you think the quality of cars has gone down? I mean, to me, it seems like they're having more issues than they had even, say, 10 years ago or 20 years ago. That those cars just seem to last longer than the new ones, it seems, in my eyes.
Yeah, most of them are absolute crap now. They're made to break now. You know, years ago, an automaker, the whole thing they pitched to you was reliability and how long you can keep this Buick, how long you can drive this professional grade GMC, and that's why it costs this much or whatever. Very few are made here now. And, you know, Toyota, I just pops in my head because I did a thing on them not too long ago with another friend. And you look at this new Tacoma, you know, number one, they've taken away the six-cylinder, naturally aspirated. Everything's went to a four-cylinder turbo. But the price of that truck and the price of the 4Runner, et cetera, all these have went up drastically. Not like, oh, it went up $3,000 this year, you know, from last year. It's went up a bunch in the last couple of years. But, you know, most of those trucks are made in Mexico. You know, so you took away a job from somebody here in the States. You're paying, you know, next to nothing hourly down there. The materials are not the same. The quality's not the same. And you're charging me way more money. So I think they're all, you know, they're all designed to break. But now they're designed to break, in my eyes, a whole lot faster than they should. Manufacturers, I don't believe, are interested in making fixes to the vehicles anymore. They just want to sell you a new one. I think there's just too many parts, too many things that can go wrong. And that's why I like driving the older stuff. I don't need a ton of stuff in my vehicle. But, yeah, we're definitely not building cars the way we used to. None of them with all these four-cylinder turbos are going to last. They're just not.
The luxury car, the new RX from Lexus has a four-cylinder turbo in it now. And I mean, I can't afford it. I'm not going to buy one, but are those still going to be on the road 20 years from now? I guess we'll find out, but I'm going to guess probably not.
I would guess not either. But, you know, the good thing with the Lexus, that lease residual is so it's just so obscene. You know, you can drive one of those still, if you lease it, relatively inexpensive because it's just worth its weight in gold, you know. So I would not want anything four-cylinder turbo. That's just me. If I'm leasing it, like her, what the hell did I just say? That Outlander, that loaded out Outlander thing that I got for a couple, you know, dollars a month for her. That's got a four-cylinder. Yeah, Outlander. Okay. It's got a four-cylinder turbo in it. She doesn't put her foot in it. She's not doing buku miles. She's running kids to practices and school and stuff, you know. But would I buy that vehicle and nope, you're keeping it. We're driving it into the ground with a four-banger with a turbo attached to it? Absolutely not. Absolutely couldn't get me to do it. But that's what they're all going to.
Yeah, it does seem what they're all going to. Like you said, even the quality that you think on like a Toyota, They just had a ginormous recall on like the Tundra on their six-cylinder, and they're still dealing with that. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting in the next few years how many people jump ship from them. I mean, I still think Toyota makes a great vehicle, one of the best, but some of the changes they've made just absolutely, you know. Will I buy an old 4Runner and stuff like that? Absolutely. Absolutely. Would I go buy a brand new one even if I was flush with cash? Absolutely not. I'd rather have the old one. I don't like any of the new stuff they're doing. Looks wise, it all looks great. But I did drive one of the 4Runners, and I drove the Land Cruiser at a ride and drive. Nice. And just the fit and finish inside is so off brand for what I'm used to from Toyota. Just touching the plastic, and all of them are plastic inside now, not just Toyota. You know, so I don't mean it that way, but just certain things from a guy that's had 3 4Runners in his life. And I know times change and they're going to use different stuff, but it just, oh my God, it was terrible. And I if you think the 4Runner's bad, wait till you get in the Land Cruiser. Holy shit. What a train wreck. So yeah.
Those aren't cheap either.
No, they're pretty proud of them. They're pretty proud of them, and they look phenomenal. Like I said, it's not a design thing. They all have eyes to them for sure. But yeah, neither of those would be for me at this day and age.
Nice. I think I'd prefer that old GX with
250,000 yeah, buddy.
Miles on it.
Yep. You could have brought your $6,000 and I would have used, you know, a little piece of paper and put you out the back door with it.
There you go. Maybe next time you get one, I'll give you an email.
Maybe next time. I wanted to record like a full thing on it the other day. I did like a 2-minute short or something. It might have been longer, but I did a quick thing on it because I'm just so busy. I don't have a lot of time for the full length, you know, stuff right now. But I did want to at least film something on it because I haven't seen one like that in so long. And I really thought, man, I need to do a full video on this. Went to go back to do it, and the damn thing was gone. So,
I didn't think it would stay around. It went for more than I thought, honestly. That's
yeah.
All right. That's good.
Yeah. When he told me ACV on it was this, and then I saw the comps for the market, I went, holy crap, you know. Yeah, somebody will sell that thing for almost $10,000 real quick to the right person.
Right. The one that did make me a little sad was that Sienna minivan. Like, that was a perfectly good serviceable van. I mean, a little older.
Recent video, the 06, I think, that I did. The silvery
looking.
Something
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That could have served somebody for a long time.
Yeah. And, you know, but like I said in that video, I think it was that video, a dealer's not going to put their name on the back of that.
A big
new car store. Right. It's more heat than it's worth because people will just blast you, you know, and even though they sign forms, everybody gets amnesia, you know. Yeah, oh, you sold me a piece of junk.
I'm sure you get all yeah. the calls.
Oh, they don't stop. They don't stop ever.
Nice. You got anything to close there, Havoc? I think we kind of covered everything. I enjoyed this interview tremendously. I thank you for coming on. I thought it was great.
Absolutely.
I'm probably going to think of a million more things that I'm like, man, I should have asked that. But I'd keep you here all night if I could.
I think an hour and a half is a good session.
Is that how far are we? Well, we are an hour and a half.
We're an hour and a half.
Sweet Jesus.
Yeah, so the only question that I would ask you, and I try and ask
sure.
guests this, is, you know, a shout out to someone that was influential, impactful to your life, or, you know, could be someone alive or not.
There are several people that I could easily name, but since we're talking about the car business, and you had me on to do with my, you know, what I do, I would have to say Zig Ziglar. When I was much younger, I had a crazy drug problem. I mean, crazy. And I'm also an alcoholic. So I've been sober now for nine and a half, somewhere in there, years. But I was in rehab when I was much younger, but right before I got in the car business. And one of my good friends that was actually a teacher of mine at one point brought me this book, See You at the Top by Zig Ziglar. And it was about sales and life and all sorts of crazy lessons. But I got so much from that man's stuff. And it all hit me at just the right time when I needed it the most. So if there's one thing that helped push me into this business and keep me on the right road staying in this business, it would be digging into a lot of his books and stuff. So yeah, there's a few people I could say, you know, but since this is the topic, that was somebody that really inspired me, his readings and, you know, stuff, on business and just on how to do things and how not to do things that I would have never known at that age.
All right. Well, awesome.
Dude, I really do appreciate you coming by and all your candor and just being
willing absolutely
to share with us all these insider secrets that most people wouldn't. Yeah.
So many secrets revealed. So many secrets. Hey, I appreciate you all having me on, and anybody can always ask me questions. You know, that's why I always put my email and stuff. I get people email me stuff all the time that are never going to buy a car from me, but just, you know, they're not even anywhere close to me, but just want to bounce something goofy off me, or not goofy, you know, something to them that's really serious. But to me, it's, you know, a 2-second answer, because it's what I do, you know. So happy to have came on. Appreciate the invite. And yeah, if you guys need me, you know where to find me.
Where can they find? They can find you on your YouTube channel, right? At Smitty Sells Cars?
Absolutely. Yep. You can find me on there. My contact info's in there and all that good stuff. So, yeah, absolutely.
That's how I found you.
So go check it out. Smitty Sells Cars on YouTube.
Smitty Sells Cars. All sorts of commentary about cars. There you go.
Awesome. All right, well. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another episode of the Space Tomatoes podcast. We've really appreciated you giving us some of your time. And we, again, thank you, Smitty, for coming on and sharing your stories with us and knowledge. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, Twitter, X, Telegram, iHeartRadio, Podcast Addict, Podbean, Amazon, Apple, you name it. Just go look. You'll find us. If you liked it, give us a thumbs up. If not, give us a thumbs down. Leave a comment. Tell us what you thought. Give us a, you know, if you have an idea for a topic or an idea for a guest that you'd love to see on the show, leave that in a comment. We'll interact with you and see what we can make happen. No promises, but we will give it a try. All righty. And remember, wherever you are, whenever you're watching this, have an amazing day.
See you, everybody. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, guys.